Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are. With Danzy and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is. Yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
So here we are finally, Corey, at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim, waiting in line for the digital stage. We didn't make the main stage, but we also got more sleep than most people here, so we are very happy with that. But Corey, how does it feel to finally be in Celebration?
It feels great. I think it's be exciting to get here, and the weather's good, and the turnout's really great. Tons of people. Looks like they're excited, having fun.
I agree. So we've got a couple of awesome people that are waiting in line with us. Adam Bray is here, author of The Ultimate Star Wars, coming out, Rebels Visual Guide, so much stuff. Adam, how you feeling?
I'm feeling real good. I'm really excited to be here. I'm glad I got to actually sleep in my own bed, though I do feel bad that I missed out on JJ and KK's pizza service.
I know, yeah. I guess Dak was here last night rallying everybody, and Kathleen Kennedy and JJ Abrams provided a whole bunch of pizza for people waiting on it. And this room is, I don't know how big it is, but I'm pretty sure you could park
the parking garage.
I think you'd probably park a Star Destroyer in here and still have room to move around, most likely. We also got someone else here that we just met, who's a great artist, graphic designer. He's showing us his work. It's amazing. Tell us who you are and kind of what you're doing.
Hey, thanks, guys. Patrick Scullin. I do illustration, and I'm also a teacher, and just here enjoying the fun. The Force is with us. That's right.
That's right.
I do feel a disturbance in the line, so I'm thinking we might be moving soon.
Yeah, we're hoping to see it soon. It's been an exciting morning. First person we saw, I said to Corey, who do you think we're going to see first? We see Steve Sansweet, which was cool. Said good morning to him. Then Ashley Eckstein walks in, introduce ourselves to her.
Yep.
We met Jeff McGee.
Right.
We met Teresa and Aaron from Star Wars Bookworms. We met Thomas from Star Wars in the Classroom. So it's been really, really exciting. So kind of tell us, Adam, what's going on with you at the convention? Where can people meet you?
Yeah, I'm doing book signings at the DK booth every day. Well, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. This morning, Thursday, I'm doing signings. Right after JJ and Kathleen Kennedy's panel, and then I'll be on Rebels Report podcast. But I've got something going on pretty much every day.
That's good. You're busy. Keep you out and about with everybody. So it's really exciting. There'll be more here much later. Corey, you want to add anything before we get into this stage?
I'm ready to go. Let's do this.
Let's do this.
$40.
So here we are, still waiting in line to the Celebration queue, but we run into some our friends from Star Wars in Character. We run into a certain Mr. Jeff McGee. Jeff, how are you?
I'm so tired. I'm so tired. I'm good.
Yeah.
I got to meet Dan for the first time. He's much taller than I expected.
Really? I don't know how to take that. I mean, I am 5'8". Just kidding. I'm taller than that.
Oh, they said the same thing. These guys said the same thing about me. So.
Oh, I did.
But you were cuter in person than they thought?
No, that I was taller than they expected. You're the only person who thought I was cuter.
No, I say goofier looking, I thought.
I have a text to prove otherwise.
So, guys, what time did you get in line today?
We got here
6:30, 7 o'clock?
Yeah, around 6:30, I guess.
Yeah?
Not super early.
Wow. And what do you guys got going on here at Celebration? I know you got a big bowling event going on, a lot of cool stuff.
We got a bowling event. What's today? We got Friday night, 8 to 10, Bowmar, Anaheim.
That's what you
sold out.
Yeah,
no more tickets.
Which is a pretty cool thing. What are you most looking forward to?
Oh, geez. I'm looking forward to this panel, the J.J. Abrams panel. And Chris and I are big autograph collectors, so there's all sorts of new people that we have not yet met. So we're that autograph program is huge for us.
Which is pretty cool. Tell us a little bit about Star Wars in Character.
It was my idea. I get all the credit. It's a podcast about the obscure characters in the background, like the 30 Ewok from the left, and their backstories. We make fun of it. We tell stories, and we go off track a lot.
And it's a lot of fun and colorful language. What do you say, blue humor? Is that the...
Yes, yes. They work blue, but they work it very well.
That's very, very good.
Not baby blue. We're talking full-on adult blue.
Dark blue, right?
Yeah.
And so then we also meet someone who's got probably the best Stormtrooper armor I've ever met. Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us what you're most looking forward to.
My name is Marcus Doring. I'm a member of the 501st Garrison, or Legion. And my TK number is 14057. Definitely looking forward to this panel here with JJ and Kathleen Kennedy and all the surprises we're going to have in store. And then I think the next one is the certain podcast, Coffee with Kenobi, I think. So I'll be there.
Good, very good. And I know you've been such a great supporter of us through Facebook and Twitter, so we really appreciate that too.
You
will. Yeah, oh man, it's the best. This is what Celebration is all about. And I recognize that from Celebration previously.
Yeah,
those
half
are
off, Tim, right?
Those
half
are
off.
Awesome. Those are awesome. So, looking forward to the panel, and we'll be back soon.
Cool. Got it for 50% off.
Okay, so we're still waiting in line here at the digital stage. The main stage seems to be everyone's already seated, so we're doing pretty well. And we've been talking to these awesome Star Wars fans in line. Of course, Adam's still with us. And then I meet some good friends here from the Virginia area. And go ahead and introduce yourselves and tell us what you're excited about for Celebration.
Sure, thank you. My name is Fred Baldessaro. We're from Alexandria, Virginia. This is my wife, Sarah, and my son, Theodore, who's two. This is our first Star Wars Celebration. I think the thing we're most excited about is to figure out what J.J. Abrams is going to say this morning.
Yeah.
And then for me, I'm an old school Star Wars fan. So anything to do with the original trilogy, the behind the scenes costume stuff, the listening to Billy Dee Williams, Anthony Daniels, all that stuff, the secrets of the Mos Eisley Cantina, those are the things that I'm going to be focused on over like the next 4 days.
Yeah, they're going to be fun. There's so many exciting things to do. It's almost really overwhelming when you think about it. But as we've been saying, this is such a great problem to have. What about you, sir? Where are you from?
I'm local. I'm from Long Beach, down the street.
Awesome.
My first celebration.
Yeah, very good.
So,
What's your name?
My name is Arnold.
Arnold, first celebration. What are you most excited about?
I want to see the what J.J. Abrams has to show for us, has to show us today. So hopefully it's fun. I like what he did with the Star Trek. Am I going to get killed here?
No, we're good. We agree.
I like what he did with the Star Trek, so I'm hoping he can do that, you know, what they didn't do with the last three prequels. So hopefully he can flip it around for me.
Oh, yeah. I think we're in really, really good hands. Then we got these awesome cosplayers over here. We got Han and Leia. Right? Tell us about yourselves, guys.
Been Star Wars fans for a while. This is my second, her first convention celebration, and his first.
And we're from Ohio. I grew up with a huge Star Wars, Star Trek fan, so of course I had to be one. And we have to bring up him as one, too. He loves R2, anything to do with R2. So.
Well, that's good parenting. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
You think he'll say hello?
Hey, Mike. Hey, Theodore, do you want to say hello?
Hey, who's your favorite character?
Do you like? Inquisitor? Don't you watch Star Wars Rebels with us? And who do you like on the show? Do you like
Ezra?
Kanan?
He likes Paul.
Kanan Ezra. The Inquisitor is your favorite, isn't he? You like this guy right here? Yeah, he's pretty cool. All right, well, thanks again, guys, and we'll be hopefully find out what JJ's got to say real soon. All right, so it's been a whirlwind day, a lot of amazing things going on, but the best part about it is we spend most of our time with Full of Sith, so I'm here with Brian Young and the Mike Pilot. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, what's up, guys?
I like how you're the Mike Pilot. There's no other Mike Pilots in the world.
And Anakin's here, too. Say hi, Anakin.
Hi, I guess.
So tell us, guys, overall impressions, the trailer, just kind of what's going through your mind right now.
I'll let Brian take this one first.
We're home. That's it. There's nothing else to say. Han Solo said it all. The fact that Han Solo said anything was really, like, that's... I'm still having trouble forming thoughts about it.
Yeah.
I've only seen it twice, and then the ones we did with the dissection on the live stream. So I need to see it more, I think, before I can have anything coherent to say about it. But I think there's a lot going on, and it raises more questions than it answers.
Which is what we like.
You know, isn't that what a trailer is supposed to do, or a teaser? So, for me, you know, I watched it twice this morning when they played it live, and then I watched it a couple more times this afternoon while I was waiting for some other panels and stuff. But the telling things for me, as a big Darth Vader fan, to see the melted mask that brought a tear to my eye right away. But like Brian said, hearing Han Solo speak and what he says, I mean, that just a new TIE fighter helmet, I. thought looked outstanding. Just
that
everything.
That chrome stormtrooper with a cape.
Yeah.
And it's, the legions of stormtroopers, I think. I was just surprised by that. That was actually still in its wholeness, I guess.
Yeah, and at this point, you and I have still only seen it once because we went on the podcast stage right away, which amazing blessing, too. And I noticed Darth Vader's helmet. It almost looked like it was made of bone, just by the way that it had obviously been charred and everything. I thought that was kind of a nice, almost like a Mesozoic touch to it, which I thought was pretty slick.
Well, I had expectations of seeing nothing, no images of Vader at all. And then to see a burnt, like somebody went back, like you were talking about in your show earlier today, somebody went back and found that mess. Like, who did that? Who went back and got it? And for what purpose? For what reason? Yeah, I mean, it's wow.
And you wonder who was looking at it. I assume it was Luke, but it doesn't necessarily have to be Luke. And I want to ask you this, too. When they say, my sister has it, and then it appears they're handing a lightsaber to Leia, her lightsaber, as she's looking at Luke's, what do you think?
When we did the frame-by-frame, it looks very much like Anakin's lightsaber, which is the saber Luke used through A New Hope and Empire. If it's that exact saber, I don't know, but that's what it appeared to be. And
that was in Cloud City in the stratosphere.
Yeah, that, I mean,
is there any chance it could be Darth Vader's lightsaber?
Well, it doesn't quite look, it's not black enough.
No, it's definitely not Vader's saber. It looks like Anakin's.
Yeah. I wanted that too, because it's very much that A New Hope echo to it, so pretty wonderful. Well, we're about to walk into the Force Awakens exhibit now, so we'll let you know what we see after we're in.
Right? Yeah. Now, I personally, we were talking about this backstage, which is funny because I just shook your hand like we haven't seen each other in a while.
Okay.
We're just backstage together. But we were talking about this because you have released quite a bit of Clone Wars material since starting Star Wars Rebels, starting with the Lost Missions that you released, Season 6 on Netflix, which was incredible. Just incredible. And then, of course, the Clone Wars Legacy content on StarWars.com, which was awesome. You know, it's great to see that stuff, but I understand
that Darth Maul is on something.
That's right. So a lot of scripts, a lot of ideas came out of that creative process for you guys. So what are you looking at today? Untold Clone Wars. What is the Untold Clone Wars mean? I've been kept in the dark.
I want to know. We get together all the time, almost every day. It's off right here in mind. And we talk about Star Wars all day, and we still talk a lot about Clone Wars. A lot of what we do in Rebels is still really relevant to what we did in Clone Wars and stories and characters. So, you know, Pop and I have had to see the last several celebrations where we like to get in front of everybody and talk kind of in detail about the Star Wars universe, a deeper dive and look at the characters. So since Clone Wars hasn't really had anything in production, we thought, well, let's take all this information that he and I know, all these scripts that we have, all these drawings that we had done, all these story reels that were shot, and I keep seeing, I mean, it's really funny, I can't go at anything about Rebels without seeing, like, hashtag Save Clone Wars people saying, bring back Clone Wars, you know, and all this stuff, everywhere I go, bring back Clone Wars. And I personally really appreciate that. Making that show meant so much to me, it meant so much to the crew of Clone Wars. The outpouring at cancellation really blew our minds. So it was really, Pablo and I said, let's give something back to these people. They obviously love Clone Wars still. We have a bunch of stuff, so let's get together and talk about it. And that's what we're going to do today.
That sounds exciting. I'm more than okay with this. That's great.
Scans and images from. There was some imagery that was already done by the art department, led by Killian. And in some cases, we actually have proxy animation, low-res animation footage that we shared today.
That's cool. So you have all the previous tracks and you've got whole sequence animation footage that is done that we're going to look at.
That's never been seen before.
Yeah.
And who knows if it may be seen again.
Who knows? I never know. But we're in the middle of shooting several episodes. The way the production worked, we worked on multiple levels at a time. We got to all the way to final animation, and the final Yoda of Season 6 was kind of the cutoff point of Western animation. That, okay, this stuff will be finished through lighting. But there were all these other things coming down the track that were in various states of completion, so that's a lot of what we brought today.
And we get to see that you're blowing the lid off this?
Yeah, we asked if we could do this, and
in a second, but if you want to start talking about,
sure.
About that.
Now, it's not exactly a secret that we were going to come back to this part of the universe, I guess it's interesting. And we actually showed a little bit of this to Journey Deep, and how many people here have joined the Celebration Journey Deep? Apologies for showing you something again, but I think hopefully you like it. You want to...
Well, we were bringing Cad Bane back. We had, those of you that follow the Plumbers know, we focused on a lot of character groups. So there was usually a Bounty Hunter series of stories, the Jedi series of stories, Droid series of stories, and then clone-centered arcs. The next arc that involved the Bounty Hunters was really the finally bringing the two big Bounty Hunters in Boba Fett and Cad Bane together. And it was a story about their interaction got into... Cad Bane's knowing Jango and a bit of history about that. For that, we did an updated Cad Bane, so this is going to be his costume, which is actually slightly different than the one he had in the previous episodes of Clone Wars. As the model and animation improved, we tend to upgrade the model. That was his ship, the Justifier, designed by Russell Chong.
Cool.
So it had a reorienting centerpiece thruster. They kind of, you see that big tall pillar, it folded back flat into the ship and folded up. So we got to see that. Unfortunately, never even happened, but it was still cool,
Let's show this to the Hasbro guys. Maybe.
Well, there it is. Someone will make it. I heard about a phone before, but...
Well, I think about all the, for example, the Ralph McQuarrie concepts that are in Rebels, right? A lot of stuff that you guys have gone through with concept art on episode one and other movies and taken those and incorporated them into the Clone Wars and of course Clone Wars. So I look at this as a Star Wars fan and think, well, you never know.
Nothing gets thrown out.
Exactly. Nothing gets thrown out. This could show up and, ooh, what's this?
So we were going to go to Tatooine.
Yeah, definitely. We had, this is a Tusken Raider shaman. Leader, and part of the story of that episode was basically...
Is that a Womp Rat skull or something?
I can't remember. I think it was like an 8th grade dragon. But it was basically George likes the movie The Searchers, so we were doing an episode where Boba and Cad kind of teamed up to rescue this kid that had been kidnapped by Tusken Raiders. And it followed a very similar plot, so we did a lot of development on Tusken Raiders.
How it translates
into
Clone Wars
style. Yeah, we can't do as much cloth on Clone Wars, so we had to find ways to simplify the outfit so there wasn't a lot of simulation involved. And you can see all the details that go into using something classic look. A lot of it, we do this on Rebels now, is based off of Kenner toys.
Yeah, how did Kenner translate into
Clone
Wars?
It's true.
Well, that's interesting. In order to avoid cloths, basically. Yeah, but it's also retro. That's fantastic. Very smart.
The do bag, yeah. We give him a little hat. I really like that. That's the thing I love most. You put a little hat on him. I'm like, oh, look. And he looks like he's smiling. But it was kind of cool to think of Cad and Boba riding these do bags out in the desert.
Those do bags now, did you get information on those as well?
Well, they would know, but that just sounds disappointing, so.
Let's not talk
about it, it's okay.
We do have a little something to show for this episode.
Oh, cool.
If we could roll that first one.
Scrap. We can take him. Oh, I'm sure we could, but instead, I want you to let yourself get captured.
What? No way!
Look, the only way we're going to be able to find their camp is if they take you alive and drag you back to it. Take this tracking device so I can locate you.
Can I at least put up a fight?
Just don't overdo it. You don't want to kill me. Get ready. Give me time.
young boy will be all right.
Don't worry, Colonel. He should be fine. As long as the seven people ain't hungry.
Probably knew along the way that they were being trapped, and that of course is Corey Burton playing Cad Bane, and Seth Green playing Total 360, and Daniel Logan playing Boba Fett. And I really love working with those guys, they did a great job.
That's a rare example of material that has voices in it. Most of this stuff that's in progress, they never even got that far where they had full cast recording it.
So that was final voiceover.
For that sequence.
Yeah, right. That's nice.
Basically, that would have been shipped off to be animated once it was locked. So it was pretty close.
Wow, that's incredible. That was really great. It was great to see the dynamic, sort of the sort of mentor dynamic there. I'd be really curious to know kind of where that could potentially go in other stories or comics or something like that. You know, especially after seeing Chango.
We don't know.
Hey, you planted the seed, right?
Well, something Fatal and I do quite a bit is we try to find a home for some of these stories, like the Darth Maul story end up in comics and even more recent stuff. So
we're always looking at it and always trying to figure out when the time might be right to revisit some of these ideas.
It's incredible. That was great. I really enjoyed that.
Moving on to the next.
Oh, cool. Wait, that looks like a Wookiee riding a giant monkey.
Yeah. George had this idea that the Wookiees knew these giant tree spirits, and so I sketched this for him, and then you see the little yellow post-it on there. It's because he didn't like the first head I drew for it. So
really?
Yeah.
So that's a scan of your binder?
Yeah. So I put a post-it on it and redrew it, and then he liked that one much better. But the Wookiees could kind of summon these giant tree gods and ride them, but it was a very kind of religious thing for them. They didn't like to do it. They didn't like to take them necessarily into battle. It was kind of a benevolent way of looking at their existence with nature, really.
Wow, that's really great.
Yeah, I like that one.
We had shown this one online on Dan's blog. Since this wasn't going to be an arc specifically that visited Kashyyyk, and it's just a great piece. So.
Yeah, I like the idea that the clones that worked with Yoda would have kind of smacked his face on their helmet. So if you look at the front of that clone, that guy has kind of the silhouette of Yoda's ears going back on the helmet, which was kind of fun. And it was always kind of neat to get to. I mean, you know, to draw Chewbacca and Yoda, and that's my job, is always up. But this day, 10 years, it's still really fun to do. And drawing Yoda for George was always great. He is his favorite character in a lot of ways, so I just had to make sure I got it right.
Oh, look at this.
Yeah, this was a scene that happened in the arc where Tarful basically was asking permission of the forest to kind of go into battle and do some things that were rather challenging. And a bigger portion of the story arc, it was a transition leader was working for the Separatists, and basically they had an alliance with the Separatists to attack Kashyyyk, and in order to kind of get them out of the city of trees, the Wookiees were going to have to burn a portion of the forest. The clones had no problem doing this because strategically it made sense, but it was very upsetting to the Wookiees. So you had kind of a push and pull dynamic between the Wookiees and the clones where they didn't really get along, but they were trying to find a common purpose in fighting the Separatists. But
those were ideas that had been around for a while, right? It's pre episode 3, even when episode 3 was a production that was around.
Some of George's earliest notes really talk about the way Wookiees commune with the trees. And if you find, and this is another thing that we do, is that we've got all these old interviews that George did back in 77, where he was basically speaking in the voice of the characters to someone in Lucas licensing and giving them the sort of information they need about the backstories. There's one where he goes on and on about Kashyyyk, and it talks about their ability to commune with nature, and it's almost force-like, their sensitivity to what the trees are like.
Wow. What's the Trandoshan connection? as well. Obviously, you had that great arc in season three. You guys remember the transitions in season three?
Padawan Lost.
Yeah, those were great episodes, and so the Trend Oceans kind of come back, and
that's probably very good.
Yeah,
I directed them. You think I remember the name? Right there, it's so impressive. I've hit that point 10 years in where I can't hardly remember anything anymore, and I'm going to pop up. What is this thing? What is it? What is a MoMA? And he goes, "Dave, that's something you created." And I'm like, "Oh." Oh, right, MoMA, like MoMA, like Airbender. Okay, yeah. Woo! Oh, I never remember it. Thank God you're here, Joe's here. It truly is.
So these episodes, you're going to see more of these guys.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to talk about, well, I want you to do the honors.
The Bad Batch?
The Bad Batch.
This is the Bad Batch. This is what you're going to see tomorrow.
Does everybody know about this? We have a screening of Bad Batch, the Clone Wars episodes.
Yeah, it's four episodes. Basically, it will look like proxy animation, like you saw the Cad Bane stuff. And George wanted to explore the idea that there were clones that had kind of, at creation, at birth, specialized traits. And after the Clone 99 incident at the beginning of that, what was it, Rookies, the previous episode?
Yeah.
That the Kaminoans and the Republic had decided not to kind of dispose of some aberrations like 99, but to actually impose further mutation on them to create genetic super soldiers, kind of. So the Bad Batch were the expression of these elite squad super soldiers, and the writers, especially Matt Nikovitz, got very into the Bad Batch was his favorite, so much so that I keep forgetting he didn't write for Stargate Brent Friedman, which was rather shocking to me, because Matt talks about Bad Batch all the time. That's all he talks about. Me and Rebels, he talks about Bad Batch all the time. So I'm screening this for him in a lot of ways. I know he will be there and be very excited about it, and I hope everybody else gets excited about it, too. It's very different to have clones that aren't quite clones, and this it works in more of the original Super Commando idea that you see Boba Fett being thought of as an empire, more along that line.
So, you guys will get to see the first four episodes that introduced the Bad Batch. There was another arc that was going to follow that, and that's the Kashyyyk arc that we just been talking about.
The one Matt actually wrote.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I got a clip from that that we can show.
Oh, let's show it.
And this is 10 voice.
What?
This is all 10 voice coming out. Personalities and different armors, kind of a mashup of Republic Commandos and
new standard clone, especially with the blasters, you know, and things like that.
Oh, yeah, we worked specifically out the Ivy blast.
Yeah, because the DC-17 there and all that stuff.
Yeah,
that,
exactly.
That's really, really cool. And then just to see Wookiees kind of, because she just seems so filled with opportunity.
Yeah.
To explore it like that. So what were those, tell us about those creatures, those kind of fragmentations.
You don't know,
Netcasters.
Yeah. They're from video games.
That's
they're
right.
They're in the Next World Complex.
Oh, I should
I remember fighting those things somewhere, and I said, I want them to fight those things. They were annoying. Now our guys killed them, so Kyle Dunleavy and his team did that scene. It was really great. Really nicely animated for proxy level. It's easy to direct because you can see it so clearly at this level. There's a storyboard sometimes kind of pop around from drawing to drawing, but it's still beautiful. But here there's a real flow to the action and the timing. And I think that one Wookiee who really breaks the guy in half, and he had these kind of forearm things he could just punch you with, like big Wolverine like on the claws. I think his name was Major Clausito.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That was what George called him. I was like, really? That's very bizarre. But
that's kind of Major
Clausito. I like the weird name. They called Baba Venomorph was the villain.
That was the Transocean.
Transocean.
Yeah.
So stuff.
We had actually shown that clip in Germany and didn't get in trouble for it, so that's why we showed
that's
it.
That's
good. Good.
So far, so good.
Yeah. This stuff no one's seen.
Oh, yeah. Ventrix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we had a big plan for Ventrix. I mean, all said she had about 8 episodes to go. And George, one of the things George was most happy with was the development of that character once we kind of dethroned her on the Sith track and kind of threw her to the Knights of Shadow world. She became an independent. She became much more dimensional and kind of interesting. So she was at this big crossover story with Quinlan Voss, actually, who was coming back for her big brother's story.
Right, awesome. That's great. Yeah, she had a really satisfying arc as a villain because of all those backstory flashes during the Night Sisters episodes. And yeah, that's great. I mean, we left off last time. She was in Ahsoka's arc. You know, Ahsoka was
I suppose a couple different things that would actually cross them over again, but it wasn't something that I could get George to bite on. But I had something where Ahsoka and her had teamed up at one point at a pretty critical passage. Something in this drawing I was like, Katie Lucas and I were interested in her having some kind of punk hair.
Oh,
really? Kind of intense. Mine's in your hair. You got a cut for that? Like, very good. You nailed it. As soon as I walked on, you're like, you look like Ventrix.
Oh, that's
hair.
Awesome.
I wonder if you know that. Well, you nailed it. It's perfect. Right, it makes it worth it. Stand up for a second if you could.
We'll put you on the spot.
We'll put you, no pressure.
Ventrix haircut.
Yeah. Come forward a little bit. That was the thing. Wonderful. That's exactly it. It's nice to know it works, actually. Because when I draw it, I'm like, I wonder if someone can actually do that. And there you did it. Thank you so much.
That's cool.
That's awesome. And there you go.
That's
awesome. That's awesome.
That's awesome. So she has a punk haircut.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I love that.
Well, you know, bald so long, people change. Sabine has crazy hair, you know,
right.
So we'll see if she keeps that. You never know. But this was Ventrix's ship, so you have to get your own car now, too. This is a take on Doug Chang design.
That's right.
For the gunship from Attack of the Clones.
That's right, gunship.
Yeah. Or as well,
they
call it the Banshee, what it was called, so I like that.
Kind of side-loading type of...
This ship, I don't think it's the biggest one, but this ship will actually show up. We gave it to somebody else in Rebels.
Change the paint job.
So change the paint job.
Same
model. Change the proportions a little bit, but it will show up because I like it. So. Nothing gets thrown away.
Is it a crazy paint job? Like a crazy, weird, crazy paint job?
No, we made it more what
like
something Ralph would do. That design is not, that paint job is not something that Ralph would do. It's something that was in more prequel era, so we simplified it and made it more a standard color and stuff around the line. It's pretty cool.
I'll stop fishing. I'm just wondering.
That's fine. Fish away. You never know. With Clone Wars, I can almost say anything except really critical things, like stuff about Soda. So, yeah, it's the bad stuff. We'll get to that.
We got Quinn showing up.
That's cool.
And this outfit, you might know, this was more like the comic book outfit.
Yeah, this was much more like what he was wearing closer to the end. The Star Wars Republic series.
Yeah, I mean, as it would lie, I tried really hard to blend
elements from the EU into what we're doing on our own, whereas when Jordan was in favor of it. And Voss was in slightly different outfit at first, and the model came out okay, but we redid the entire model, his facial model, and tried to get it a lot closer, you know. Every now and then from the EU, there were big things that I had to go off track with, like Mandalorians and their pacifism, which was different than I know what, you know, was perceived in a lot of the material. That's why George wanted it. But when I could, I tried to stay pretty faithful to EU stuff when we would use it, at least visually, because I know how much it means to people.
The situation with Quinlan is interesting because George was particularly enamored with that character.
He was, yeah.
So he read the comics, he liked this character, and inserted him into the show. And though his first appearance in season 3 is a little bit more jocular, a little more fun-loving, this story arc would put him through a lot more gears that would turn him more into the darker, brooding character that we're familiar with in the comics.
So, in terms of characters like Quinlan Voss, or even in Asajj Ventress, or some of these characters that maybe were pre-established before Clone Wars, how does that come about with George? Did he find it in the comic book first? Was it something that was introduced to him by a research group? How did he find Quinlan Voss?
He's interested in it. I mean, he loves Star Wars, so he'd probably he'd pick up a comic book and say, I like this guy. But it doesn't mean he would be beholden to use that stuff as it was used. Mainly, I found I liked the way something looked.
Yeah, it's so visual. He gets first dibs on every piece of Star Wars art that's ever made. So he has the option to buy that. And if you go into some of his workplaces, there's great licensing art from all ages along the walls. He loves it. And I have a feeling that he just ends up loving some more than others. Like, he'll buy a picture of Aayla Secura and go, that's great, I need to put that in the movie. And he did, you know.
Well, like with Ventress, I know, like, he liked her, but then as it evolved, he did not like that she was some athletic dude. So he made her story, he got rid of that and threw her down, and then, you know, she became in some ways more interesting on her own.
Well, the Night Sisters is an interesting example of, oh, I've got this idea. Well, there's this thing called Night Sisters from Portugal, Princess Leia. So, and then it's like, well, why don't we call them this?
Exactly.
And why don't we call it Dathomir? So that's kind of the... So it kind of came in kind of at both angles.
That's every time there's a real panic, I go to Pablo and Leland, and I'm like, you're not going to believe what we're doing. The Mandalorians are pacifists. How are they going to race for this? And then we try to figure it out. But we have a clip of...
Oh, let's show it, yeah.
So you'll like this. It's a clip of Ventress. So this is every time we were going to do with her.
Thank you. this one, honey.
Honey?
I don't think so. That was one of my editors playing for the boss, Nick. And that was another one of my editors, Sheila from Adventures. We would, in the process of making an episode, we would do a lot of changes in dialogue right in the editorial room. It's something I learned from George. We would, you know, record a temp track, but then we would keep rewriting lines and trying to find better lines. And, it was something that he did as a director and something he taught me to do. So I would always, I wouldn't want to waste the budget on having the actors actually read the lines and then have them redo it over and over and over again. So I had people within the studio. We call them the, you know, the Big Rock Temp Crowd. And so all these, you know, different people that worked on the show would come in and voice the character. And some of them get really obsessed with how good they are at it, and they're not good ever. My editor swore that, like, he was Captain Rex. And, you know, Henry Gilroy to this day thinks he does an amazing Obi-Wan Kenobi. But he's really, you know, Henry doing James, doing you, and
doing Alan Kennedy.
It's like a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. So it's okay, but not as good as Henry thinks it is. So it's really funny stuff. I have just tons of them still recorded, and I'll call them sometimes. Like Justin Ridge, we used to call him in the middle of the night, one in the morning, we'd still be work editing. We had him playing on a con bar, and he says, Chavasso, my sweet little Padme, and then we just hang up. And we'd call him, and he'd answer and hang up. And so that's how serious our job is. Fast at the time in editorial, for sure.
Well, that was amazing. Even with temp voice, temp animation, you know, temp sounds, I mean, that was a really elaborate sequence. I think you pointed it out when we were looking at this a little earlier. It's the one clip I did see before. And it's incredibly staged with new weapons, too. I mean, what was it? Can you talk about Ventress's?
Or Night Sister Bows, or her last vestige.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was it's a sneaky thing. That's a kind of Pantora that was in an earlier arc. We designed it several times, and we finally were going to go there and do this kind of parkour thing. The bow that she uses is a nod back to something that I love in animation, which was the original 80s Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. And Hank had an awesome energy bow that could almost do anything Hank wanted it to, seemingly at the right time. And so that was a little bit of a nod to that.
And you still see a little bit of Hank in Ezra's slingshot.
A little bit, yeah. I love that show. I still watch it. And without it, I don't know if I would have gotten into animation. It was really inspiring to me. So that was a little bit of where we got that.
One thing I was going to point out, that chase was going to continue in among the sights and sounds of, you know, Pantora City. They're going to come across this statue. And I don't know if you here can recognize what's at the top of that statue. It's Chairman Papamoda, a.k.a. George Lucas.
It was a funny shot. We had some birds sitting on it. And, okay, well, as long as the birds aren't doing anything up there, we'll be fine. You know,
it's kind of a Trafalgar Square.
Yeah, there you go.
That's cool. So, we'll get into what happens in the storyline, but in these, it's eight episodes total. At the halfway point, Count Dooku gets involved. And it becomes important for a mission of Passage's on for them to attack Dooku's lair on Serenum. So, what was your plan?
Well,
it's going to raise some questions.
That's all right.
But that's all right.
Okay. I didn't know we got approval. So that
we didn't get disapproval.
That's a really interesting way to look at it.
It's better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission on this one. Is that the,
yeah.
You guys want to see it?
There was this whole thing where they had to go to this massive separatist gathering on the planet. It wasn't on Sereno, it was on
Raxus.
On Raxus. And Ventress had to wear this big ball gown, basically sneak into this ball. So I thought that'd be some.
She's doing that tomorrow, probably.
Okay. Talking to Ashley, you know, about couture all the time and playing fashion, so here's some Ventress fashion for you that she can fight in. So still has a little snake accessory. That was a fun one.
Alright, so we'll get into play, but it's probably the less said, the more seen, the better. So let's see what happens.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow.
Dark Disciple, a novel by Christy Golden, coming out in July. There's a poster that Del Rey is going to be making available. I don't know when, but we're asking about it. And it's great. We gave the scripts over to Christy and to Del Rey. They were very enthusiastic to get it. And she turned it into a full-length novel, all 8 episodes. And it's a compelling read, so I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
The adventures. Get the haircut.
Yeah, you'll get this.
Yeah. That's for you. Anyone that gets their hair cut.
Yes. So this book comes out in July and is a perfect example of us all working together and trying to find places for these stories. Where it makes the most amount of sense.
That scene was amazing. I mean, it was really, I mean, just the choreography was so clever, and it was so great to get,
if you did the little nod to something else.
I saw Time Bandits.
Yes!
And I saw Captain EO.
That's
with the
very good.
At the same time.
Time Bandits.
But I saw Time Bandits in there. Like
I love Terry Gilliam.
So. But when he sends the Force Lightning down,
yeah.
I saw.
Yeah.
For those of you who remember the old Disneyland attraction.
Definitely Time Bandits when they fight the devil.
Oh, totally.
Here's a heck of a look.
Great Terry Gilliam movie.
I've got. So those were the real, the core arcs that we want to talk about, but there's so much art. I'm calling this the lightning round where I've just picked images.
Lightning round, and this was all approved.
Yes.
Okay.
So just quick stuff to talk about.
We was always a struggle to get all the council members on the Jedi Council. Finally, we were going to have them, so we were building the last council. Typical Balava was one, which is now significant to me because she turns out she was Kanan's master, so that was kind of important. It's a great painting. Basically, see on the left-hand side, those are medical units, almost like MASH units. The shuttles over there, you see a medical shuttle, would carry in and drop onto the battlefield. This was in the aftermath of a big battle that occurred on
Ormento.
Thank you. And so great. This is basically the Republic mopping up after a battle between, I'm just going to tell you, because it seems we're in free-for-all mode. So it's between Separatists and the Mandalorians, actually. And the Republic came in. No one's wondering what the heck happened.
And this ended up in the Darth Maul son of Death Eater arc. So, but I just want to show them the art that inspired the comic. You guys just want them. Yes, that's also from that arc.
Cool. Yeah, Maul's Mandalorian really took to the whole red and black paint scheme thing. So, but on a filmmaking level, anytime you're having battles between similar groups, you need them easily identifiable on screen. So most of Maul's equipment and loyalists became red and black on some level.
Here's one for trivia fans.
Oh yeah, you can tell them who it is.
All right, finally, for those dying to know what Oppo Rancisus' lightsaber looks like. There it is.
I thought it'd be fun to make it similar to Dooku's, to show that it's not just one person's lightsaber, but it's a style of a lightsaber.
That's
So, this was a funny joke, because I realized at one point that none of the clones, maybe outside of Rex, actually knew that Anakin was seeing Tabby Lilum. So when you see the Bad Batch's gunship, they actually have this painted on the nose. And Anakin sees it, and he looks at Rex, and he's like, what is that? And the Bad Batch are like, oh yeah, that's that Senator from Naboo. This is for the TK's fan out there.
Yeah, for whoever, I don't know who you are, who keeps hoping that Senator TK's of the Corn was going to show up in Clone Wars. He almost made it.
He almost made it. And there was an above water city of the Corn that we were going to do.
Yeah, we were going to go back to Mon Cala for another storyline set on Water World there.
Wow.
This I find fascinating.
George and I had a discussion about, Coruscant built vertically, and something that I always liked is how a lot of churches are built on ancient sites, ancient pagan sites. They were other things before they became the present-day church that they are. So he and I discussed how if delve down beneath the Jedi Temple to its ultimate base that is probably built on top of other ancient ruins of other religions of the Force, and ultimately there is a possibility of being a Sith Temple way down at the bottom of it. So if you delved into the temple vertically, this is some of the architecture that you would find, and there is a story where we journeyed down below the guts of the temple on Coruscant.
What happened in that story?
Tragic. There were these things.
Which is why you don't go down there.
Yeah. They fold up like those giant sleeping rocks, and then they unfold, and they're just like these giant kind of skeletal kaiju-like things.
Wow.
I was really digging. But yeah, creepy stuff. And then this was top down with clones.
Yeah. Top clone?
Yeah, top clone. It was basically the army clones, the ground forces, got in an argument with the pilots, and their astromechs got in an argument, and R2 insulted the astromech, and it became this thing where Rex ended up having to fly a fighter with R2 as his co-pilot. And Rex doesn't fly, so he was mad at R2, and he was involved in this chase. It was just a total, like, military serviceman battle ego royale, and then Rex, of course, crashes and is stuck with R2, so it turned out to be madness. I wish we got to do that one. It's pretty funny.
This is a great version of the
movie. Yeah, that was a crazy thing.
Would you believe that this would ever
the show up
anywhere?
Wow!
This is me going through Dave's sketchbook going, Dave,
what are you doing with this? Getting all Vector Prime up in here.
Well, yes.
Wow!
Once you make the Mandalorian pacifist and bring Darth Maul back from the dead, anything is really possible. We were working on a story that involved the Vong in a very minimal way. It was kind of a scout ship that was trying to assess the strength of the Republic and kind of what Jedi were. It got a little bit into that. It was pretty creepy, and this was just an exploration I did of what a ship would look like. And all those kind of flanges and side were going to kind of move and oscillate as it moves through space. And that's a Jedi cruiser in front of it, just to give you a sense of scale.
It was really planned that the storyline really played on the alien abduction vibe. Mm-hmm. It's almost like an X-Files episode.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty creepy. And then I started to explore some of the armor of what I had seen of the Vong and how I was going to take and distill it down to an animated style. But we never got that far.
Always in motion.
Oh, yeah. So these were going to be clone troopers that were like Ahsoka Tano loyal to
them. Yeah, inspired by her.
I don't want to get too much into what that's about.
What if you got a little into what that's about?
Well,
let's talk about our girls.
Okay. We, of course, were done with Ahsoka, and we had a pretty big plan for her. As far as the, what would lead up to the end of the Clone Wars, definitely I'll say that the end of the Clone Wars TV series actually coincided with Revenge of the Sith and went past it. The final episodes of the series actually explain where Ahsoka and Rex and the major characters were during things like the Battle of Coruscant, during Order 66, and even like kind of up into where things happened after Order 66. Also, it gave us context, so you can watch those movies and go, okay, now I get where they were. This bike that you actually see behind her, you actually see it in Rebels. It's actually Kanan's bike now, so I reuse that asset because that asset got built. This was Ahsoka's new costume that we were going to do, and I just really like this costume. It's kind of based a little bit more on a little anime kind of pop style. I asked Ashley what animal she would like on Ahsoka's booth, and she said monkey. I don't like monkeys personally, I like wolves, but she picked a monkey, so I put the boot monkey on there. And I just wanted it to be a little bit different of an outfit for her, something that we hadn't seen yet. And it was basically dealing with the repercussions of her deciding to leave the Order and how someone that was raised in the temple something in the outside world, well, she was smart in a lot of ways, now a soldier and a commander. She might not be as smart about how things work on the street and the type of people that she would meet as she tried to figure out a way to, if she was going to come back to the order at all, for what it meant that now she's left the order as a detail of her life. Right there.
We have one last question.
So the thing that we got really upset, I'll just set this one up a little bit, was that George and I talked a lot about actions that escalate. So you got your primary action as senior going to direct, but then what he loved about Indiana Jones was something else would happen. You would know what Indy's goal was, but on its way from getting A to B, there were all these other side things and things would get worse. So as I was directing on Clone Wars, I kept trying to challenge ourselves on like, how could we write things that escalate and make even worse? It makes the action more tense, it makes it funnier. And by the end, I think we were finally starting to get it. So this scene, which involves Ahsoka on her spear bite, will show you a little bit of that type of action, which is leaning, I think, a little more Indiana Jones than it actually was Star Wars, but it was something that directorially George and I wanted to explore.
That's great. You guys want to see it? Let's do it.
I
mean, obviously we had plans, and I felt very strongly about the show, given that, you know, I thought I learned a lot, maybe, and I thought it was a very quality show. But, you know, what I'd like to finish back with, there's no doubt in my mind I would have liked to. I also respect, though, that, you know, there has been kind of a big shift, and we're now telling new stories and setting a lot of things straight the way we want to. So, lost in the middle of all that for me, frankly, was with a lot of people that I worked with a long time. But I, my main focus became, you know, ending Clone Wars and finding satisfying to do that with Yoda, and then finding a way to put everybody on a new show in Rebels. So for me, Rebels kind of became the new focus and a way to, you know, keep all the work that my team and I had done on Clone Wars alive. And I know it's a very different show, but I think if it means anything, the people that I have working on these shows, they worked on Clone Wars, they worked on Rebels, they're the heart and soul of this whole thing. My main interest is keeping them at Lucasfilm, and they're going to continue to move forward and create, I think in the end, shows that surpass Clone Wars in the long run with the technology we're developing at our studio. So, and I would say this, you know, don't let a pro fall over or things that are happening. You know, Kathy and JJ love Star Wars. They're doing a magnificent job. The people working on the movie are just brilliant. They care about Star Wars as much as you and I do. And what I love most about everything moving forward is it comes from a place of loving Star Wars. And in the process, you know, you lost Clone Wars, and I totally appreciate the disappointment. But our hope is to replace everything that we do, hopefully bigger and better, and more about the experience we had making that. Of course, we'll be with us for a long time.
Thank you.
So the Mutapau arc, were those kyber crystals what Palpatine used to power up the Death Star's super laser?
I know the answer to that. I'm going to pass the question to Pablo. See how you answer that question.
I'll say, got a couple of pieces of evidence that kyber crystals can be used to do that, true. That Palpatine wanted kyber crystals from Mutapau, true. Did it actually get from A to B? I don't know. We're not done telling those stories. But you're right. That was the intent. That was what those were earmarked for.
Recently, you made available some stuff for Ahsoka, the colors of her skin and the link and all that kind of stuff. Are you going to make more of that available to customers going forward and even going backwards? Some costumes are really amazing from the Clone Wars, like the Jedi Devil card and a lot of the Mandalorian Death Watch stuff, but it's very difficult to get what color is that, you know, what shape is that. You know, we customers want more.
Okay. Yeah, I have no problem with that. My favorite thing coming here is seeing you guys in costume. So I hadn't thought about that before Greg coming back to Clone Wars. But usually the way that comes about, I had a fan, you know, ping me on Facebook that happened to say, hey, I'd like to have the actual color of the Hera's, you know, orange jumpsuit. And I said, sure. So my art department's kind of put those together and composed them. So I'll look at doing some of the Death Watch and Clone, no problem. I mean, just frankly, you know, shoot it online on my Facebook page and then I'll get specific characters. But definitely I'll keep doing more Rebels, but I can open that up to Clone Wars too.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Cool.
I got it here. Okay. What happened to Barriss Offee? Because there were a lot of unanswered questions.
Well, that's a great question. So I say that, while I'm saying that, I'm actually formulating my answer to you that I can reasonably give you. I'll tell you what did not happen to her. In the original script, she died at the end of the episode. She blew up her prison cell and her along with it, with the same kind of microbots that were in, what was that girl's name?
Thank you.
So we're at Leta Tremont. It's amazing how you do that. It's hard to jump the spot. It's so impressive to me. And I helped make the show again, so it really blows my mind. You frighten me. But wanted to have faith for Barriss, so I cut that part. You're welcome. And I had plans for Barriss, and still do. Like, I think Barriss is an interesting character. The most compelling thing I find about what Barriss said is that a lot of it was true. It wasn't that what Barriss said was wrong or a lie, it was the way she acted that was wrong. And that, I think, gave Ahsoka a lot of pause, and in a lot of ways was the reason why she left. She couldn't deny a lot of what Barriss said. It was true that she wouldn't come back the way Barriss did, so.
Do they ever meet again?
Do they ever meet again? That's a great question. We'll make a great story, probably, but not a story we'll tell today. I don't know how much trouble Pablo and I are already in, so we'll just keep it, you know, the DEF CON we're at right now.
Right over here. Well, you can relax because I have a pretty easy question.
That's never true, but okay. I'm trying to drop my guard. That's really great.
Well, I was actually wondering, is there any chance you'll ever publish your personal sketchbooks so we can see kind of the thought processes in your characters?
I would love that. I would really enjoy that. I would want to try to give you guys context for the drawings and kind of explain what the thinking was behind each of them. I would say just keep asking for it.
Would you guys like to see a follow-up to the Art of the Clone Wars book?
Yeah.
I'm not every publisher you know, because I'd love to see that book. And
yeah.
Just let people know that the interest is there for an Art of the Muslim Animation book, I think.
You can put it together, curate it, and you could basically
write
it
on the top. No, I would love that.
And we'll buy it.
There you go, too. Right here.
Hey, Dave, it's Lillian.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
You got the figure?
Yeah, I did.
All right, cool. That was hard to find.
Really? Yeah.
All right.
I was able to find them anyway. But, you know, I've been asking you the same question since 2012, so it kind of came a little full circle today with Boba and Bane. But you said that you recycle concepts and ideas, so do you think maybe we'll see any of that in Rebels?
Things from Clone Wars, wanting to be Rebels, ideas and concepts?
Like Boba Fett and Bane.
Oh, Kevin being a rebel. He's a real roundabout about that. It's very tricky. Boy, at present, he is not. I'll be very honest with you. He is technically a rebel. Because Sabine just painted a picture of him in her room, which I find really interesting because it means that Sabine knows who Embo and Cad Bane are, because Embo's in there too. So it makes you wonder about Sabine. So if it's related to our characters, I'd say there's more of a shot of it. At present, I'm just going to be honest with you, no. He would be a big-time character for them to deal with. So I don't think it's not out of the realm of possibility. I would probably lean a little bit more Embo, because I like Embo, and he's got the dog. But then the writers tell me his dog would be dead. Dog. Like it's an alien dog. They did this for a long time. Right? It's not the hat. So I don't know. Maybe it's never impossible. But right now, I'm just really excited to have Soap back and see you back.
Been mentioned a couple times that Kyle Newman recorded some voices for episodes that weren't released. I just want to know, did he voice Kitster or Ben Quadraneros?
Well, I don't have to know. He played a tune. It wasn't Ben Quadraneros, and we just watched it the other day. And it's a brilliant performance by Kyle. He brought, you know, he understands Ben Quadraneros in a way that nobody else has done. I can say that with certainty. And it was really fun. It was really disappointing that it never made it to screen. I was so glad I could have him do that. I don't think you'll ever see it. It was a really strange voyage. I'm probably doing him a favor by not showing it. Maybe next celebration. But he would not play Kitster. I don't know where that kid is. Everybody keeps asking me on an escalator today, where's Kitster? I'm like, I don't know. I wish I could help you. Put him in Rebel, you know? You know, yeah, that's not gonna happen. But it came up once, and that's like right there with Paulo.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go put Paulo in it. He's an artist.
We can't turn goes into a shelter for all these abandoned characters.
Maybe we should put them all in the same theme together. One after the
concert.
I would put Kyle in that episode as Kyle Newman, surrounded by vintage action figures.
On their way to the Jedi Temple to see, you know, Archive One or something. Right here.
Hi. I'm a big Cat Bane fan. I just really want to know what your idea for their relationship, Cat Bane, Boba Fett, together was like. Was it like a passing of the torch sort of thing, or mentoring, or was he going to...
I would definitely say, it was a big passing of the torch. I mean, you know, Cat Bane is angelized. If you watch sort of the early westerns, he is that character, and Boba is Clint Eastwood. He's an angelized name. So when you take the two characters together... I can't remember if it's full dollars or a few dollars more, but they work together a little bit. You know, there's some camaraderie there, but they're also enemies.
Yeah.
And so with Bane and Boba, you know, there was a thing where Bane basically was teaching Boba that Bane knew his dad. Secretly, what Bane was doing was there was always a dispute of who was better, Bane or Jango.
Oh,
and because Jango got taken out by Mace, Bane feels on some level that that's now never going to be known. But here's Boba, a perfect copy. So if Bane can teach Boba to be great, like his dad, then Bane can probably finally find out who is better. And a lot of it is like about legacy. And so you're getting into that. And I didn't even hear what you said, so I can't agree or disagree with what you said. So I don't know.
Well, we have this incredible screening tomorrow. It's tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow. More Clone Wars tomorrow.
So much more Clone Wars plus Rebels. You're going to be on this. You're on the stage pretty much every day this
That's
time.
That's why I'm here.
That's right. Well, unfortunately, I hate this part, but we're out of time, unfortunately, in this time.
But I got Hondo in line. You know, hey, Hondo, how's it going? Well, I hear you. I hear you're at Rebels, Hondo. I don't know. What do you think? Well, stick around and watch this weekend. You might see yourself. I'm just saying.
Please join me in thanking Dave Filoni and Pablo Hidalgo from Rubens Film for the panel. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.